chickens.
Oh.
Down chickens. Could you hear it?
Yes.
Did you hear it?
I think it is in Hop's right paw.
Oh, no.
Darn it. There. Darn it.
But it is in my right hand, so that's pretty good.
I was close.
I only have two hands, so it wasn't. What is this game? What is that game?
I've never heard of this game in my life. Have you played Quarters?
Maybe it's like a Midwest thing. I don't know.
I'm in the Midwest.
Oh, that's right. In Chicago.
Yeah, I'm in Chicago, for goodness sake. Wait, hold on. I need to know. Is Pennsylvania, is that in the Midwest?
Yes, Scranton's closer to New York than anything.
It says Midwestern United States includes Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin.
All the ones that you would say with a weird accent. I'm sorry, everyone. Not weird. Different.
Not weird. You're not weird.
You're not,
I mean,
weird.
Everybody thinks that we say Missouri here in Missouri, but
North
we don't
Dakota.
Say Missouri.
It's Dakota.
You know, North Dakota and South Dakota and Wisconsin. Those don't have Pennsylvania in them. So no, I'm sorry, but Scranton, Pennsylvania is not in the Midwest.
Okay.
Regardless, I have no idea what Up Chickens is.
It looks like a pretty good game.
Okay, here it is. Wow.
Breaking news. Do, 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 do.
It's called Up Jenkins.
Up Jenkins?
But people call it Up Chickens.
That sounds like a Pennsylvania thing. And I can say that because I spent 4 years going to school in Pennsylvania.
You have the right. You have the power. There you go. Up Jenkins, a.k.a. Up Chickens. And it does make me wonder, like, are they saying chickens? Maybe they're saying Jenkins.
No, they're totally saying chickens.
Okay. Well, interesting.
I'm firm in the chicken camp. They have to have said chickens.
It's interesting that you said Midwest because it does say referred to as Up Chickens in many Midwestern states, especially Michigan. So did one of the writers who decided they were going to play Up Jenkins, did they come from the Midwest and therefore decided to call it Up Chickens? Who knows?
All right. Listeners from Scranton, do you play Up Chickens or Up Jenkins all in the bar? Or is this a totally brand new, I have no idea what they're talking about thing? I'm
maybe
super
just
curious.
Chime in general.
That's where, right.
No matter,
somehow
tell us
I
where
manage
you're
wants
from.
To know.
Tell us where you're from and whether you play Up Jenkins or Up Chickens. In fact,
we should
maybe
make a poll.
We'll put out a multi-day. Yeah, there you go. Multi-day mm-hmm. poll. Which one do you play? So I've never played this game. Have you ever played this game?
No, but I want to now because it looks kind of fun. It looks fun for like a long table, right? There's two sides. It seems like a really easy structural game to play. You just need a quarter. There's no splashing. There's no cards. There's no throwing of things. Like, it sounds good.
Yeah. See, and that's people are like, you want to play beer pong at house parties and stuff? I'm like, no, I don't want to play that game where you put nasty balls that have been all over the floor inside.
You could always play champagne pong.
Well, beer pong, champagne pong, anything that involves tossing things at each other. I'm just not in. Wait, does
outside
champagne
only.
Pong involve tossing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, but
see,
outside.
I like
I'm
that.
All about those games, but outside only. Like flip cup, all that stuff. Outside.
Oh, no. No, thank you.
You're like, no. Ooh, sticky. Ooh.
I am, but that is exactly how I feel. Sticky and gross. Well, I don't feel that way. I don't want to feel that way. Sticky and gross.
So speaking of sticky and gross.
Oh no.
No, I'm kidding. I don't know. There's no sticky and gross in this.
Actually,
at all.
We could do this. Speaking of sticky and gross, if you get stuck inside of a straitjacket wrapped in chains, you're going to get sweaty, sticky and gross after a while, especially if you roll around on the ground.
I have to say, I think Steve Carell had a lot of fun filming this. It looked pretty funny.
It was the different cuts of him like trying different ways of getting out of it. My favorite moment, though, is honestly the moment when he shouts out like a friggin' dinosaur when he realizes he lost the key. And it's just this. It's so good.
Yeah, we're talking. For those of you who need a visual, we're talking about the cold open where Michael puts himself into a straitjacket and is pretending to do magic, 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 magic. And he drops the key that he had hidden in his mouth. And Jim, in order to prank him, hides the key under his shoe. And Michael has too much pride than to ask, hey, where did that key go? And he proceeds to struggle to get himself out of the straitjacket, which he eventually does, I guess, because he asks the camera crew, have you seen a key?
I really want to sort of dissect for a second here the concept of learning magic and performing magic, because it's been my experience that it's sort of kind of a very particular personality type. I, for example, have learned magic in the past. I never like performed it really. I just liked being able to do it and like show my younger siblings, oh, check out these magic tricks. But I do feel like this is a very particular sort of personality type that has to do with finding something that allows you to bring wonder for people and allows you to sort of amaze people. It's a way to sort of get someone to latch on to you so you feel like you're sort of in complete control of their attention and make them feel amazed with something that you're able to do. It's a very powerful thing when it works. And I see Michael, like, I see him, like, as a kid watching magicians and being amazed and then realizing how much attention one can command if they do that well. And unfortunately for a lot of people, like, you don't end up doing that well in commanding a bunch of people's attention. But he's trying so hard to get everybody's attention and to amaze everybody. It's like a 1-2 punch of the things that Michael really wants. And I see him using it as like a technique for gaining friends through, or gaining respect, I guess, through this wonderment.
We see Michael's interest in magic come up throughout the series, and it's very much a part of his personality of wanting to provide that wonder, amazement, and performance that is magic, and appreciation for the skill of magic, but yet not having that skill. Like, he can't quite broach it. He doesn't quite commit enough time and energy to actually learn what needs to be learned for the magic. He's after the audience attention side of it more than the, oh, look at the skill that I accomplished in doing this.
Yes. And the other thing that I want to note is there's a little bit of Pam and Jim interacting with one another to sort of double down on the chance for a prank here. And I don't know if you noticed that, picked up on that. And I really like that because I think that it shows that they're still in sync. They latched on to the opportunity for a prank. They built it up and they made sure everybody in the room knew that Michael did not want help if he could not get out. And then also, because Michael had to repeat it twice, then he himself sort of, because of his pride, has to agree to not getting help from anybody. So it's devious and brilliant. And it's just a little bit of a reminder that the two of them work really well together.
So Micah, the early worm gets the worm.
Gets the worm.
And we see the office in this episode gets divided into two camps. The one camp going to a cocktail party.
My boss's boss's boss, the CFO, not his initials, common mistake, is having a little shindig for all the managers in the company. And Jan and I are going as a couple.
And then the other group who, because Michael is now left early, they decide to also ditch out early and go to a bar in town called Poor Richard's. So we kind of get these two plot lines. I want to start with talking about, we'll talk through the cocktail party and then talk through the bar.
Works. Does that sound for good? Me. Yeah.
So Michael and Dwight leave early and we get a nice little comment to the cameras being there when Jan calls on a cell phone and asks, you know, are the cameras there when she wants to have a private conversation with Michael. And I like that. That's like another little nod to there's another character here, even in a time where they're going somewhere completely different. And we see that later on, too, when Rachel Wallace is kind of dodging her way around the camera and she kind of accidentally walks into it. I love that. It shows the kind of like she hasn't been on film at all through this entire filming of the series. And so having these cameras in her home during this cocktail party is super awkward and really weird. And she has a moment with that. And I love that. And it really highlights, right? Like, who walks into a camera and then they keep it? You know, like that's right. Totally showing, like, look, this is still here, and we're acknowledging that this party is being filmed in a really unnatural way.
If you think about it, it would be David Wallace announces he's having a cocktail party, and then the documentary film producers have to figure out, okay, well, we've got to get this set up.
Got to get clearance.
Got to figure out how all of it's going. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah,
really
even
good.
When she opens the door and Michael's there, and she's because he's there ridiculously early, which Michael has his reasons for, which I think are really funny.
Actually, it's polite to arrive early and smart. Only really good friends show up early. Ergo, de facto, go to a party early, become a really good friend.
There's a note that that we're about to get to, and this is sort of exactly the thing that I feel about this as well. All of this, as you've noted, it's just one more reminder that he has not had the opportunity to experience these things, right? He's mm-hmm. not, he hasn't been given too many opportunities to go to any social gathering. And so he's going off of what he thinks is the right thing to do. And so much of it is wrong, especially showing up so early that, she still has her wrap in her hair. Like she just got out of the shower.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And she's even taken aback. Like she makes this tiny little eye contact with the camera that's obviously kind of like standing behind or beside Michael. Like, oh gosh, the cameras are already here and Michael's here and he's bringing potato salad. Like everything. It really is. The whole potato salad thing is a great little running gag throughout the party. But
oh my God.
It shows that Michael's very thoughtful and he knows to bring something to a party. And so I like that part of it, but it shows that he's so clueless about what formal gatherings actually are. And like, he should have brought a bottle of wine, but instead he's bringing potato salad like it's a picnic. Right?
Yes.
And that's what it is. It's like, it's the endearing side of Michael, right? Up next to the just socially awkward side of Michael, and it's all encompassed into a Tupperware of potato salad.
I mean, this starts, I think, even a little bit earlier. One of the things that I wanted to note, you talked about how Jan calls Michael in the car, and it is this sort of Jan is wondering if she's on speakerphone. And what's interesting to me is she calls because she wants to blow the party. She doesn't want to go to the party. She just wants to basically do what they did in Jamaica. And Michael, on the other hand, is saying, hey, this party's really important to me. And I think that this is a perfect little metaphor for how the two of them view this relationship. Jan is, I would call it sort of midlife crisis point and some other things that she's dealing with divorce and stuff like that.
Yeah, she's kind of on the rebound.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Rebound area and sort of wondering if this is what she wants to do next kind of thing. And so it's fun and secret and sort of, as she's mentioned before, even though we've talked about how it's kind of painful that she's this way towards Michael, but sort of sees Michael as this thing that's not right for her, but she's mm-hmm. doing it anyway. And that is like her whole motivation in all of this and sort of what turns her on about this relationship. And Michael, on the other hand, is very sort of, this is everything to me and I want to share our love with the world, even though Jan has never said that she loved him. And so, yeah, I think this call is exactly how they feel about the relationship overall.
And we see that later too with the love contract.
I need you to sign these, Michael. It's a waiver of some of your rights. You realize this is a legal document that says you can't sue the company.
Over our love.
I've never told you that I love you.
You don't have to, Jan. This contract says it all.
There is a lot of hesitation coming from Jan because she really did like it being secret.
Why is this so hard? That's what she said. Oh my God, what am I saying?
I love that Jan like becomes a little bit of Michael and she's like, oh no,
she's freaked out about it.
It's
yeah,
so good.
She hates that she's become a little bit Michael-y.
That whole complicated relationship that you just discussed with Jan wanting the secrecy because that is kind of what's driving the thrill of the relationship for her. But yet Michael wanting the commitment and the love and the tickle fights and all the things that he wants, the endearing, very relationshipy parts of a relationship. That's what he wants. And they don't mix. And I think any more aware people would realize that and end this relationship, but they're both very needy at this time. And so they're just kind of plowing through anyway and just gonna be like, all right, so let's try and make this work. Let's see if we can make it work. But it's a little bit rough. Anyway, someone else has a whole bunch of relationships she wants to talk about. And I like that Karen pranks Jim in episode.
Yes. It's about doggone time. The first time I saw this, I was right on board with Jim, obviously thinking that that's what was going on.
Because she's not super good at it. Like, let's be honest, like it's a prank, but it's a little bit too real of a prank. It doesn't rub me the wrong way, but it is not as jovial or funny as a prank Pam would play.
Right. Yeah. There's
it's a different kind of prank. It's a Karen prank. It's not a Pam prank. And it's nice that it is a prank. And I like that Jim really falls for it, but it gets him a little bit too mad in the process. So I don't know. I don't know. It just maybe that's a way to highlight how Karen is almost right for him, but not quite.
Karen's pranks are my kind of pranks in this situation. Like, this kind of prank would totally be something that I would do, including the sort of going in for another round.
Yep.
So I'm laughing. I think it's hilarious.
But you need something to do at these parties. Some of them, they're so dry.
Right.
I do love that we get to see that fun side of David Wallace, because first we see him offering scotch, right? And we see him very, very corporate, I guess is the best way to put it, in that scene. And we'll... Anyway, Michael's reaction to that is just awesome.
Here is to Mr. Iacocca and his failed experiment, the DeLorean.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Do you have any ice? Sure. How about some Splenda?
We've seen Michael with Scotch and Splenda, or we will in the future. It's kind of his thing. And then we get to see David Wallace being that kind of cool guy that he was just like, you know, I don't like these parties. And that's exactly what Jim went through in a confessional early in the episode.
Why don't I want to go? Didn't expect to need a reason. So let me think here. I don't know any of these people. It's an obligation. I don't like talking paper in my free time or in my work time. And did I use the word pointless?
And then we get to see David Wallace also not into it, even though he's the host.
God, I hate these parties. You want to sneak out back and shoot some hoops?
It humanizes David Wallace, and it makes him into kind of just like regular person, because he wants to just go shoot some hoops, have a casual thing. He doesn't really want to be here at this party talking paper with people. And I really like seeing David Wallace like that. I think on a lot of shows, when you get the corporate people or the outside bosses or some of these authority figures, you never get to see their more human sides or their side of, I'm not just a business person. You know, you get to see him chilling with Jim, just shooting some hoops in the backyard. And I love that. And I think that Jim also loves that. He sees that in David Wallace. He was like, oh, you're not such a, you know, big scary guy as I would think that you would be. And now you're just kind of like a dude bro who's hanging, and we're gonna a good dude bro.
It's weird to me in the first place. Like, I understand that David Wallace is a new leader in the company. The show continues on as if the CFO is the CEO of the company, in the way that David Wallace sort of runs everything. And that has continued to be a point of confusion for me that I've never understood, why everybody is sort of like after his CFO position, and why he sort of seems to be running the company, and he's always the one coming to different places and like trying to close places down or make places better. And all, it just doesn't add up to me in terms of his leadership role. But yeah, that's just an aside on David Wallace. And for some reason, he doesn't freak out too much about the fact that Dwight is literally pulling his chimney off of the roof, which is a great moment.
Well, that's a whole nother thing. Dwight's role in this party, he basically just kind of tags along with Michael and then proceeds to do this elaborate home inspection that kind of just starts as a home tour. And it is so Dwight. I love him going through the house, criticizing everything. I love Rachel Wallace's reaction to it. And she's just like, I'm going to go back to the party. And then it just culminates with him up on the roof. And then Dwight saying to the camera that it was a great party.
The chimney's in decent shape. Not great. I found some termite damage in a crawl space and some structural flaws in the foundation. So all in all, it was a pretty fun cocktail party.
I like that he's not just awkwardly milling around, that he has found a task, and it is a very, very Dwight task to do.
And his creepy entrance into the young boy's room, and just like that, the conversation that takes place there.
Oh, good. You're up. Hey, who makes this chair?
I don't know. It was here when I was born.
I want one. What is this? Oak?
I don't know.
What do you know?
We totally need to talk about that, because that is Greg Daniels' son.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember us talking about that.
And it helps to use the producer's children and writer's children, because you kind of know that they're going to be there. You know, they're not going to be booked elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go ahead and move on to the bar. And yeah, it's important that we note that before the bar, even, I think we've made this reference over and over again, which I enjoy because it's a good reference. And that reference is, don't call me Pammy. This is Pam starting to really put her foot down and say, listen up, world. It's me, and you're going to listen to me for once, and I'm going to get things that I want out of life, and I'm not going to let people push me around. And that starts with her telling Roy, listen.
Hey, Michael left early, so a bunch of us are going to go to Poor Richard's for happy hour. You should come.
I can't. My brother, he just unloaded the jet skis and kind of took a bath, so we're going to get hammered.
Okay, well, we're going to a bar. Hey, you have to come to stuff with me. I'm serious. If you're going to be my boyfriend, you have to do boyfriend things.
Yes, Pam. Yes. Oh, so happy.
Yeah, we see a real turning the corner point here for Pam. Like, she's really beginning a shift in her character, and that shift is becoming more assertive. And I like her confessional about that.
I've decided that I'm going to be more honest. I'm going to start telling people what I want directly. So look out, world, because old Pammy is getting what she wants. And don't call me Pammy.
I like her showing throughout the episode the things that she is doing to actually make that happen. And whenever she kind of does one of those things, she kind of makes eye contact with the camera like, haha, see, I did it. I sent back my beer. Regular Pammy, don't call me Pammy, which is take the beers and be like, oh, okay. But no, she said this one was supposed to be different. And I like this writing for her, because as we go forward, we're seeing a very different Pam. And a lot of the times people will look back at a series and be like, wow, that character from the start of the series to the end of the series feels like a completely different person. And bad writing, that shift happens with like, oh, they changed over the writing staff, or you don't understand why it happened. It feels like it comes out of nowhere. But in this show, which is part of why we love it so, so much, we see these shifts and these changes happen so gradually that it is really realistic. And this is one of those moments where we saw Pam have her breakup with Roy. We saw her kind of slightly get back together with Roy now, and she's changing her mind about what she wants, and getting new clothes and trying to be more assertive, and her hair starts to look better, which everyone always comments about in TV shows when they get bigger budgets. But it really is actually happening for the characters in their lives with this great writing. So this is the big shift for Pam. She's saying, no, no more. This is going to be new for me. And it's not done in such a giant way that we feel like it's completely out of character. I mean, these things that she's doing, she very meekly says to Roy, like, you have to do boyfriend things with me. Mm. And then she very meekly says, like, oh, no, this was the wrong beer. Like, that is such a mild thing to do. Almost anybody would send back the wrong beer. But that was a big thing for Pam, because she was starting out at such a point where she would have just accepted that.
No, actually, one of these is supposed to be a light.
Oh, sorry.
So they up Jenkins, they play around. Toby spends the whole time trying to win Pam a duck, a stuffed animal.
Poor Toby, you're so misguided.
Yeah, because something that I noticed about this is Toby, as of late, seems to be trying to, and I know this is a still a new term for you, but shoot his shot with Pam.
I hate it.
Get with the program.
Oh, I don't want this program. sending it
this
back.
This program, can we please cancel this program?
If it's not on the side, I'm sending it back.
So he more lately has been trying to shoot his shot with Pam. And she, of course, is sort of just awkward about it, not getting it, uncomfortable. But it makes me wonder, is it just that, like, when Pam is not with and actively seeking out and sort of flirty with Jim, then Toby feels like he has more of a chance? Because it is true that later on, you know, he still is awkward, but it's not as obvious as it is now. And it's, I should say, this is obvious for Toby because he's still sort of weirdly kind of elusive and clandestine about the way that he's expressing his interest, of course. But this is still more forward than he tends to be about his feelings for Pam. And so to me, it's like he thinks that right now is his best opportunity. If he's ever going to convince Pam that he's somebody worth paying attention to, now is the time.
Well, I think it's because she's single now. We're seeing the uptick in Toby's advancements on her from Toby's side anyway. No one else sees them. But it's because she's single now, right? Like, yeah, she's started slightly dating Roy again, but before she was engaged. And then right after she ends the engagement, that's when we start seeing Toby kind of trying to make his move. And I think that that is just coincides with it. And she just... she misses it all because he does it in such a terribly weird way. You know, like he could have, and he's winning her a stuffed animal that she, just because she makes one little passing comment. I'm like, that's just the wrong kind of attention that I think that people get turned off about. It's just like, oh, you say, oh yeah, I like that thing. It's like, I'm just mentioning I like it. I didn't say I want it. You know, like there's a different level here. It's not like, oh, will you win that for me? No one asked you to do it, Toby. She just commented walking past and you overheard like a creeper. And then you spend the whole day trying to get this toy that obviously she doesn't really want because she's a normal person. And she was like, you should give this to your kid because that would be appropriate. Like it's just so many times we've seen Toby just fall flat in his flirting and it's painful.
He tries, and he fails.
Can we talk about Creed, though?
Oh, my God, Creed. So Creed swipes a doggone laminator from the sheriff's office and happily tells the camera this. But it means that he's very good friends with all the young people. And I love how everybody's looking at him like, what the heck is going on here?
Hey, Creed.
Hey, so what are you guys up to?
Hello. You're the man, buddy.
I run a small fake ID company for my car with a laminating machine that I swipe from the sheriff's station.
Yeah, because these kids are way too young to be in a bar and everyone notices and they're like, hey, Creed, what's up, Creed? Like, it's so great. Even Oscar is like, what is happening? And we get another dose of Creed's kleptomania in that he runs this fake ID business out of his car. And so he's real popular with like the 18 to 20 year olds.
Oh, my God.
I really like this kind of outlaw idea of like this really dirty old man outlaw that we have of Creed.
He's like, what? He doesn't, not many people I think get a pass for being able to be that way. And you know what I mean? Like, I normally would be very put off by this kind of person, but there's something about Creed that I'm just so on board with Creed. I think he's great.
Oh, so good. So this whole thing, everything that's happening in the bar kind of culminates and comes to a head when, after they're playing their up chickens, down chickens, which we spent the beginning of this show talking about, Roy says to Pam,
I can read you like a book.
Oh, yeah.
You can't get anything from me.
And she kind of is like, oh, there are things you don't know about me. And in the spirit of starting their relationship anew, Pam doesn't want there to be any thing between them. There should be no secrets. And I find that virtuous of her, that she wants a fresh start and she wants to tell him something that she's been keeping from him because it's kind of weighing on her. And so she tells him about the kiss that she shares with Jim.
In order for us to make it, there can't be any secrets between us. Remember that casino night about a month before we were supposed to get married? I kissed Jim.
What?
He told me how he felt, and I guess I had feelings too, and we kissed.
Jim came on to you?
Just listen.
No, I am listening. That's the problem. I'm listening.
Don't yell.
Don't yell?
And he loses it. He reacts so poorly. It's not even poorly. That's insane. And immediately Pam is just like, this is over.
This is over.
Yeah, you're right. This is so over. You kidding me, Pam? Come on!
And I'm so proud of her in that moment to not excuse it for being like, oh, he's just over emotional. I said something wrong. I pushed his buttons. No, she was just like, that's it. Close this shop down. This is not happening. And him and his brother just trashed that bar.
So he had said from the beginning that they were going to go and get wasted, and it seems that over the course of the event, that is exactly what they did.
Well, I got to ask you, so the whole thing with the jet skis that Roy is pitching about him and his brother Kenny, about him being taken with the jet skis that he tried to sell them, didn't get enough money for them, and they were going to go out drinking, that was kind of the story. And then we see this weird little moment where Pam asks about it to Kenny, and Roy's like, ooh, shh, shh. So there's obviously a lie going on here that Roy is keeping something from Pam. So that's another part of this whole thing, is that Pam, in the spirit of honesty, is revealing something to Roy. But he has been constantly implying, and at least the camera work has been implying, that he's keeping something from Pam. We don't know what that something is, and I don't think it really matters. What matters is that there is a lie being had here, and he's doing that also. And so there's this whole cloudiness going around this where he has this giant overreaction and he's kind of lying to Pam. Pam's trying to be honest with him. She shuts it down. It's a whole hotbed of emotions, and then the bar gets trashed.
So I didn't see it that way. The way that I read that situation was, it's one of those things where somebody's super sensitive about something and they don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so Pam asks the brother about it, and Roy is in the background going like, it's sort of like asking somebody about, oh, if someone came up to me and asked me about my former partner because they didn't know that we weren't together anymore, then the person who is with me who
would be like, don't bring it up.
No, no, yeah, don't bring that up. Don't bring that up. So I read that as,
I could see it that way.
No, please don't talk about that. Because, and the only reason I think that he was telling the truth is because of, at the very end, we see the brother come out and he says that the way that he kept the police from being involved is he paid for the damages with the jet ski money. Mm-hmm. And that makes Roy say,
I'm gonna kill Jim Halpern.
And I'm like, listen here, literally everything that just happened
was your stinking fault. Yep.
How is Jim? I've never been more annoyed with Roy than in that moment.
I think I can get on board with that. Okay. That was the only thing with my interpretation of it. The ending was a little bit weird. So I think maybe you're right.
Okay.
I think it would probably be really fun to film a bar trashing scene. That looks awesome.
Oh my God. There are those places where you can pay to like go into a room for an hour and
just
destroy. Like, yes, I want to do that so much.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Oh, a fun little thing for anyone watching after we talk about this, please notice Kevin in the background when Roy gets up in arms about he starts the bar wrecking scene. I believe Kevin is in the back there, like with his fists up. He's ready to fight, and I think that's kind of funny coming from Kevin.
Sweet Kevin.
We get that tiny little moment where, before we completely give out our Dundee, I want to mention that we see that Kevin is still engaged, but it's complicated. We don't really get a lot of mentions of his fiance, Stacy, but it is in this episode, but it doesn't seem like it's going too well.
Yeah, it's complicated to the point that he gets very defensive.
Yeah.
It's kind of awkward. Like, oh boy, okay, well, let's everybody just calm down a little bit, please.
Trying to see if I have any other little tiny things that I want to mention, because sometimes I feel like we leave something out and I'm like, oh, I just wanted to mention it. But, you know, we're all watching the show together. We all chuckle at the same spots, or hopefully we do. Oh, another little trivia kind of fact that I really like. David Wallace says that he was gifted the 20-year-old single malt scotch by Lee Iacocca. And the funny little connection there is that BJ Novak's father, William Novak, ghost wrote Lee Iacocca's autobiography.
Whoa.
So there's a little like strange little connection there. Yeah, a
tiny wink in there somewhere.
Yeah. So maybe that was something that, you know, they all knew, and that's why they happened to choose that one person to have gifted the single malt scotch, which
interesting.
Michael can't handle.
Yeah, he cannot. Scotch and Splenda. Tastes like Splenda, gets you drunk like scotch.
Yes, I think that all the time. That's coming
I've
up.
Never had it though, because that sounds terrifying.
Well,
because
Splenda's terrible. All right, well, do you want to give out something that's not terrible, which is our Dundee?
I would love to give out the Dundee this week. This week's Dundee, we are calling the Prism Duro Sport Award. For people wondering, if you don't know, then you're not a true Office fan. No, I'm kidding. The Prism Duro Sport is the name of the MP3 player that Roy gets for Pam instead of an iPod for Christmas. But the Prism Duro Sport Award is going to go to Ed Casey. That's at Ed Casey on Twitter for his clandestine advertising of our show over on Woot.com. Recently, Woot had a sale for Plantronics Backbeat Fit 305 Sweatproof Sport Wireless Earbuds, your choice color. These are some Bluetooth headphones you can pop in your ears, but the description for these are as follows. They're called quote unquote sport earbuds, but believe you me, you can also wear them to marathon listen to Somehow I Manage, a podcast about The Office, without getting off your couch while you crush a full bag of Doritos. So this was incredible. Ed Casey shared this little link with us on Twitter and said, hey, you might be interested in the description here. I clicked on it. I saw it and then replied, what the heck? This is awesome.
That's awesome.
And then Ed Casey followed up to say, there just might be someone over at Woot who is a fan of the show, who has a beard, who, and that's whenever I was like, oh, it's you. It's you. So thank you so much, Ed Casey. Get on up here and accept your Prism Duro Sport Dundee.
That's amazing. I love being mentioned in a product review. This is right? So exciting.
I immediately was like, Tiff, check this out.
So good. Well, we wanted to thank everybody for listening to our show. Hopefully you're wearing your Duro Sports listening. You can follow us over on Twitter at @tall_beats and tell us if you come across any more product reviews with our name on it. You can also subscribe over at The Incomparable, and you can get a kind of members access feed, access pass. I don't know. You can get the password to get on into the conference room, a members only Slack where we talk about The Office. And also, it's coming up on The Incomparable's membership month. Mm-hmm. And we are planning some plan things that you can possibly participate in. If not, you can at least listen to some bonus material from your beloved Somehow I Manage. And remember to rate, star, and review us over on Apple Podcasts and wherever else you want to rate and star. I don't know, on product listings, or maybe you bought something on Amazon and you just want to talk about Somehow I Manage. We would love that. So yeah. We'll be back next week talking about the episode The Negotiation. Oh, don't eat that potato salad. It's been in my car for like all day.